Hello and welcome to the Muni Lowdown. My name is Paul Graves and I'm the Managing Editor for Dentwire Municipals. Today's podcast title is Stadium Securitizations. Today, I've brought in a group of heavy hitters to discuss the topic, including Eric Homer, Editorial Director for our sister product, Dentwire ABS, and ABS stands for Asset-Backed Securities. We also have Muni's and ABS reporter, Kunal Kamal, and the head of securitized products research and strategy at Academy Securities, Dr. Stav Guillaume. We'll be discussing the use of securitization to finance stadium projects and monetize future cash flows. And to our audience, please note that we are recording on the morning of Wednesday, April 23rd. Kunal and Eric, welcome back to the podcast.
Hello, everyone.
Good morning, Paul.
And for the first time to our podcast, Dr. Guillaume, welcome to the Muni Lowdown.
Thanks, Paul. Happy to be here, guys. Look forward to the discussion.
Dr. Guillaume, is it okay if I call you Stav?
Please do.
Okay. All right. So let's move forward. So Stav, I just want to give the audience a little bit of your background. So you head a research and data analytics department that aims to provide unique insights across securitized products. You serve as a trusted advisor to Academy's institutional clients. The department specializes in bottom-up, deep fundamental analysis, collateral-specific underwriting, and structural, legal, and valuation nuances of structured finance investing. You have over 20 years of experience in securitization research. You joined Academy in early 2022 after a 16-year career at Citigroup, where you were the co-head of global securitized products CMBS and CRE strategy. And for the uninitiated, CMBS stands for Commercial Mortgage-Backed Securities, and CRE stands for Commercial Real Estate. So Stav, with this background, help me out, because I'm a novice here, and give us a quick primer. What exactly is an asset-backed security, and how do securitizations typically work?
So securitization is the process in which owners of rights to future cash flows sell those rights to investors through capital markets, and in return, the owners get a lump sum. So instead of sitting around waiting for those future cash flows to trickle in over the years, the owners, sellers can immediately monetize those future cash flows. Now, those future cash flows can come in many forms. The basic category, and historically what really started the securitization markets a few decades ago, are mortgages. Banks provide mortgages to homeowners and then expect future payments from the homeowners, the borrowers, over many years, essentially creating long-term assets for the banks. Now, banks generally are not interested in long-term assets or holding long-term assets. Their liabilities are mostly short-term in the form of deposits. Plus, banks' main business is originating mortgages and other types of loans, and they would like to recycle capital as quickly as possible. In contrast, you have many capital market investors that are interested in long-term assets. Think insurance companies, pension funds that actually have long-term liabilities, and unlike banks, would be interested in holding long-term assets. So by using securitization and the capital markets achieve efficiency, better matching of investors and assets. The process also creates liquidity, essentially converting non-liquid assets such as mortgages into asset-backed securities that you mentioned, Paul, or ABS, liquid bonds that can be priced and constantly traded in the market. Now, the success of all of this is tied into those future cash flows that are sold into the capital markets and back the asset-backed securities. The market should have the ability to predict those cash flows, underwrite them, value them, and have some level of comfort that the cash flow stream will perform as expected. For that, we need plenty of data, historical performance of the asset category, good disclosure and transparency by the cash flow owners, and you have very developed and deep markets for many categories that meet those requirements. Residential mortgages, commercial mortgages, Paul, you mentioned CMBS, commercial mortgage-backed securities, auto loans, credit card loans, and so on. And what we've started to see in recent years is the emergence of more and more additional cash flow categories, perhaps more in the esoteric side, where owners look to securitize stuff like music royalties, solar loans, data centers, And our focus today, sports-related or stadium-related cash flows.
So, Stav, you recently wrote a report entitled Sports Securitizations, Gear Up to Wet League Revenues and Stadium Cash Flows. Can you summarize what actually sports securitizations are and their potential as a financing tool?
So in some sense, securitizing sports-related cash flows could immediately fit the basic securitization framework that we just discussed. You have owners of rights to cash flows or revenues that will materialize gradually over time in the future. Think ticket sales, season tickets, media contract payments, and so on. And the owner of those rights, they could be major sports leagues, professional sports franchises, or stadium owners, are not necessarily interested in waiting around many years for those revenues to come in. The owners would prefer to immediately monetize those future revenues and may have funding needs, or they would like to recoup previous investments in their facilities or franchises. On the capital market side, there is now plenty of appetite for what we refer to as esoteric ABS, esoteric asset-backed securities, less traditional categories of cash flows. ABS investors are interested in diversifying their portfolios beyond the traditional categories, maybe look into categories that are less correlated with the broader market, and sports securitization could definitely be one of those. Investors also look for higher return investment opportunities. Again, something that investors can more easily find on the esoteric side compared to plain vanilla ABS. And you also have a few sports-specific or stadium-specific recent developments that could support sports securitization. And we discussed that in the report that you alluded to, Kunal. We have private equity firms now buying stakes in NFL teams. Miami Dolphins and Buffalo Bills recently sold 10% stake each, and other transactions are percolating. At the same time, quite a few teams are building new stadiums or undertaking major renovations to existing ones. So all of that creates sort of win-win environment where both originators, issuers, and investors are very open to get involved in sports securitization deals.
Stav, what makes stadium financing different or more complex than other types of asset-backed securitizations?
So that's a good question, Eric. Despite the clear appetite in the market for sports securitization, there are a few aspects that make this category a bit more challenging. First, when you compare the nature of the future cash flows from sports facilities or stadiums to that of established securitization categories such as mortgages, you see that sports cash flows can be less contractual in nature. In a mortgage, you have a very specific and detailed contract between a lender and a borrower that clearly defines the future stream of mortgage payments, the contractual obligations of the parties, and what happens if the borrower defaults. In sports facilities, in stadiums, you don't really have a contract with most ticket buyers, and even the ticket sale itself may or may not happen in the future, unlike a mortgage that is already there when you securitize it. So that introduces plenty of uncertainty into evaluating and predicting stadium future revenues, and it has implications for the pricing of securitization transactions, what ABS investors would be willing to buy, and how rating agencies will rate them.
So, Stav, I'm trying to understand, because we covered stadium financing for munis, and there a municipal bond financing for a stadium may leverage a mix of public revenues, tax assessments, or special district earnings. In contrast, it seems stadium securitizations could rely on dedicated revenue streams like ticket sales, luxury suites, and naming rights as collateral, right? Finally, so how does the predictability and stability of these cash flows compare between the two financing routes? And what implications does this have for investor risk?
So, Kunal, I think your question indeed touches spot on a key difference between stadium financing via muni bonds versus securitization. And it's important to understand those differences. Here at the Academy, as we're working on sports securitization, We are also closely collaborating with our Muni department that was involved in some of the largest Muni stadium transactions, such as the Tennessee Titans Stadium in Nashville and others. And in the Muni space, you have a municipality that may own rights to future revenues from stadiums, but the municipality, as you alluded to, also has many other revenue sources that it can tap if the stadium revenues do not pan out as expected. The Muni deal can include a municipal guarantee backed by their GO, general obligation, or appropriation, various taxes, including those from hotels, dedicated sales taxes, pilot agreements, and so on. In contrast, in securitization, it really is just the stadiums that back the deal, and there aren't any other revenue sources to fall back on. Now, of course, that does not necessarily make muni financing better than securitization in every respect. The different revenue sources will impact pricing, structure, deal reserve levels, and so on. So investors will take product differences into account and price deals accordingly. Also, the issuers or the owners are different across muni and securitization deals. In the muni space, again, it is a municipal conduit that issues the bonds, and investors will assess the strength of the municipality if they have a guarantee for that debt. In sports securitization, the issuers could be private sector companies, facility owners, sports franchises, and so on that will sell their revenue rights. So a totally different approach to analyzing the issuers, the sellers. And of course, one last thing, much, although not all of the municipal stadium financing is done through tax exempt deals, making for a much lower interest cost for the financing.
So Stav, stadium projects come with unique risk factors, such as fluctuations in game day attendance, event scheduling, and even natural disasters. How do these factors influence deal structuring and investor risk assessments? And the second question is, how do securitization structures and municipal bonds differ in their ability to tailor their risk allocations, such as incorporating non-relocation covenants or performance-based triggers to address these project-specific risks?
Yes, that's great. I mean, Paul, you're exactly alluding to some of the factors that can make stadium revenues more volatile. And those are real risks that are happening on a regular basis. For example, in Oakland, California, we saw both Oakland Raiders and Athletics moving to Las Vegas, which affected the local stadiums. In Los Angeles, because of the wildfires a couple of months ago, the NFL relocated in January the Los Angeles Rams playoff game against the Minnesota Vikings from SoFi Stadium in Inglewood to State Farm Stadium in Glendale, Arizona. The NHL, NBA postponed multiple games at Crypto.com Arena. Obviously, all of that can affect any type of financing that relies on stadium revenues, whether it's muni bonds or asset-backed securities. So both financing forms, munis and ABS, would include some guardrails against those risks. You alluded to non-relocation covenants, perhaps mandated minimum insurance policies on facilities that are tied to natural disasters, and so on. But deal provisions can also vary across muni and ABS structures because, again, the muni bond may have other revenue sources to tap if needed, as we just mentioned. In ABS, you really need deal-specific mechanisms, whether it's cash flow triggers, reserve accounts, or other sources of so-called credit enhancement mechanisms that are designed to bolster the deal if the securitization cash flows do not pan out as expected. On the flip side, muni deals face unique aspects and risks that are less relevant to securitization deals. In particular, public financing of professional sports stadiums may be targeted to increase revenues to finance proposed tax cuts. So we might see a little bit of political pushback or headline risk around stadium muni bonds. On the flip side, we are also seeing many politicians coming out in support of tax-exempt issuance for those stadiums.
So let's dig a little deeper here into the details. Who are the typical players in these deals? For example, how do team owners, investors, construction partners, and public entities come together when structuring a stadium securitization?
Yes, you have many stakeholders that are involved when we're talking about stadium revenues and their securitizations. And again, that's a little different than, say, mortgages, where you just have the lender, borrower contract, and relationships to consider, and maybe the role of other entities that handle the mortgage mechanics, the servicers, but not really that broad range of different players involved in stadiums. Stadium securitization deals should and will take that into account. For example, if you have a certain revenue sharing arrangement between a municipality and a franchise stadium owner, this will be part of analyzing the securitized cash flows. If the franchise leases the stadium from the municipality, the lease terms should be fully disclosed and their implications assessed. At the end of the day, most of the entities that are involved here may have a common goal of maximizing the stadium's success, the revenues that it can generate, but the allocation of those revenues, the impact and the contribution of each of the players to the stadium's success, all of that will play a role in analyzing and pricing the stadium cash flows. On the investor side, for municipal stadium deals, we see insurance companies, mutual funds, banks, and to a more limited degree, individual investors involved on the investor side. So depending on the structure and underlying credit of the deal, investors can be involved in helping to shape those deals.
Stav, your report highlights several major projects, the Chicago Bears' $4.7 billion stadium plans, as well as upgrades for established venues like Bank of America Stadium and AT&T Stadium. So a couple questions. In your view, what distinguishes these larger projects in terms of risk and investor appeal? And what are the key challenges or potential headwinds, for instance, unpredictable local revenue variations or league-specific dynamics that could affect these deals?
Yes, that's a good point. I mean, you alluded, Eric, to some of the bigger stadium projects out there. And as mentioned at the outset, we do see a lot of focus on stadium construction and upgrades. Stadiums are really becoming part of larger developments that include entertainment districts, hotels, multifamily, office, even medical facilities. So this is also where the commercial real estate angle comes in. Sports facility securitization should pique the interest of CRE, commercial real estate, or commercial mortgage-backed securities investors, CMBS investors. Stadium revenues are tied to the facility-specific location, market, and demographics, so CRE investors may be able to leverage existing views on geographies and markets to assess facility prospects. But that also means that stadium revenues can fluctuate not just because of sport-specific or facility-specific reasons, but also because of market conditions and fundamentals. We mentioned the out-of-market team relocations in Oakland that were certainly also driven by quality of life and market conditions issues over there, and that may happen in other markets as well. And of course, when you have mega projects such as some of those that you mentioned, Eric, that could accentuate the risks that investors are taking and the uncertainty over future cash flows. On the flip side, in many cases, there is a clear and pressing rationale for stadium renovations or construction, whether it's because of dated stadiums such as Soldier Field in Chicago or the Tropicana Field in St. Pete, or in accommodating more fans in larger modern stadiums. So lots of interesting opportunities here for both owners and investors.
Well, to the audience, I want you to know this podcast shows how important it is to surround yourself with very smart people, because I couldn't have done this podcast without, obviously, Stav, Eric, and Kunal. So thank you guys for a great discussion on stadium securitizations. Shout out to our podcast producer, Anthony Phillips, who always makes sure that our mics sound right. To our audience, I hope you found this podcast to be informative. Please support us by liking, sharing, or subscribing to Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Until the next time, Thanks for joining us on the Muni Lowdown.